Welcome to the Three Creeks Church podcast, and Merry Christmas. We're in a series called Fear Not, and through it, we hope you're encouraged by the hope and peace that can only come through a personal relationship with Jesus. We hope this message helps you find and follow God.
How we doing? By show of hands, has anybody finished their Christmas shopping already? Anybody? I'm so proud of you guys. I'm very jealous. I'm like a Cyber Monday guy because Friday is just too much for me, and then I should wake up on Monday and just I buy everything online. It's so great. So I'm a little bit envious because there's a lot more gifts I feel like I have to get. But did anybody get like a 90-inch TV for like $20 on Black Friday, or anybody get run over or anything? I don't know. Black Friday. It's December. December's here, guys. The holidays are here. I'm wearing somewhat of a Christmassy flannel, which is very exciting, and I hope you're very excited for the holidays as well. Three Creeks Church is very excited, and we're starting a new series that's called Fear Not. It's 3 weeks, and basically what we're going to be doing is there's a phrase called Fear Not that occurs 5 times in the book of Luke in the Bible, and so we're going to be spending 3 weeks, 1 week in 3 different opportunities where that's said. And so I have the opportunity to open up the first week. And I love talking about fear during the holidays because, ironically, it's supposed to be a time of celebration and excitement, but a lot of us know it as a very busy time, a very stressful time, a very financially stressful time. And then you pair that with hanging out with your in-laws or your whole extended family, and you're like, this is crazy. This is ridiculous. And so I'm really excited to talk about it today. If you're new with us, we are going to be in the Bible. We have some Bibles in the back that you can grab at any point. And we're going to be in Luke chapter 1. So I'm going to let you get there while I talk a little bit. Luke chapter 1. If you have one of these Bibles, it is on page 613. Luke chapter 1. Now, while you're getting there, I want to open up with something kind of fun. I don't know if any of you have an irrational fear. I think irrational fears are fascinating, mainly maybe because I have some weird ones and I think they're interesting. But when I grew up, I lived in a split-level home, and so I would often, as most teenage boys would, play video games in the basement because it was usually soundproof and you could yell a lot. And one of my weird irrational fears was that every time I would shut the lights off and go upstairs, that somebody was going to grab me or shoot me or something from the darkness. And so I would literally like shut off the light and just sprint up the stairs and not look back. And I catch myself going there as a grown man and still doing the same thing. And I have no idea why. So I don't know if you have anything like that. I also have an irrational fear of needles, which apparently is somewhat common. I'm not afraid of the pain. I'm not even afraid of the idea of it. I've gotten needles in my life, and plenty of times in my life, vaccinations and all that. But for some reason, my brain just can't get over it. And I gave blood a few months ago, and I was considered a very special patient by the nurse because I had not only passed out once, but I had passed out twice in the process. And so I was, I thought that was pretty cool. I don't know about you guys, but the second time she was done, she wasn't even taking blood anymore. She just didn't tell me she was done, and I just passed out. So it's pretty normal in my life. What were we talking about? I don't even know. Anyways, so there's all these irrational fears. Maybe you have some. I have a couple that I wanted to research. I'm curious what people have. And so here's a couple that are interesting. Maybe you have. If you do, I'm very sorry, but I just had to pick a few. Xanthophobia, which is the fear of the color yellow. So that would be interesting. Nomophobia, which some of you might have. This is the fear of being without mobile phone coverage. So it's like you're camping. You're like, this is great. And then you look at your phone and you're like, oh my gosh, I could die. Pogonophobia, which is the fear of beards. And then my probably saddest is turophobia, which is the fear of cheese. Fear of cheese. If you don't think the world's sinful, that's a pretty obvious sign. If you have a fear of cheese, I'm convinced that heaven will be full of it because I just love cheese. Oh, all right, let's dive deeper now. Enough kidding around, right? So what are we actually fearful of? What are you actually fearful of? I'm jumping from funny to serious here. What are some actual legitimate fears in your life? And I ask you that, I'm not going to make you raise your hand and share, but I ask you that because I think we're all fearful of some things. Some are small, some are short-term, some are long-term, some are very existential. Like, where am I going when I die? What is the purpose in my life? Why am I here? You have all these bigger questions. Some people have more kind of relational questions, like you have a fear of being alone all of your life. Maybe you have a fear that you're not going to be married, or that you'll marry the wrong person, or that you'll be the wrong person for who you marry. Maybe you have a fear of isolation, or not feeling like you're living a life that's worth it. There's all these different fears that I think we're consumed by. And whether or not you would say, oh, that's totally me, I have that fear every day. Some of you might. Some of you are pretty aware of yourself. But some of you maybe aren't. But you live your life in a way that you're fearful. If we were to get down to the root of the way you're doing things, you'd be able to tell, oh, I really actually am fearful of some things. And I have some legitimate fears in my life that I feel like are constantly on edge, especially as a pastor. And I think it's interesting because the fears that we have, when I really take a step back and I kind of look at either like my life or the people who influence it or whatever, I look back and I'm like, man, I don't know what I was so afraid of. I don't know what I was so afraid of. I had these moments where I was like, God, this is never going to happen. I'm never going to pass this test. I'm never going to get this or have that, or God's never going to provide in this way. And then I look back and I'm like, I was just so silly for not trusting that God was going to provide in that way. And so one of the main things that we need to realize in this series about fear is that I fully believe that fear robs us of our freedom and joy found in Christ. I believe that fear robs us of our freedom and our joy found in Christ. I think that oftentimes because we're fearful, it's sometimes this lack of trust and just trusting Jesus. And so what happens is it robs us of the ability to be free, to be moving in where God's calling us. And it kind of causes immobilization. We kind of just sit and we're stagnant because we're like, I don't really want to take that step. Or I don't really want to go that way. I don't really want to be inconvenienced. And so we're just stuck kind of standing. And it really robs us of a full life lived. When you look back in your life and you think about the hard times that you grew through, many of you would be like, I wouldn't change a thing. Because in those times, I grew the most. So today, we want to look at a specific person's fear in the Bible. But I want to read a study that I think is a cool opener to the book of Luke. I love reading about different studies and statistics. I'm kind of a stats guy. I like it. And so I was reading this article that researchers at Penn State University, they conducted a research experiment. And they basically had participants who had to write down their specific worries for 10 straight days. And they all had GAD, which is generalized anxiety disorder. So they were all clinically proven to have that. And for 4 times a day, they were prompted by text message to record any worries from the past 2 hours to ensure that as many worries they had in each day would be possible. That seems very stressful. But the study showed, it then reviewed the list of worries every evening with those people for the next 30 days. So it was a month long to see if any of them came true. The research only focused, though, on worries that were close and not long-term. For example, I will fail my math exam tomorrow would be testable, whereas I'll develop cancer at some point in my life would not, because it's not really maybe within 30 days. So the average person that they recorded 3 to 4 testable worries a day. And the result? I don't know, what do you think? How many percent of their worries came true? What do you think? Just shout out a number. How many percent? 10? Did you say 10? So close. 9%. 9% of all of the worries that they had written down actually came true. 9%. 91% of the things that they worried about, and these are people with GAD, some of us don't even have that, didn't even come true. And of the 9% that did come true, the outcome was better than expected about a third of the time. And for about 1 in 4 participants, exactly 0 of their worries materialized. Isn't that fascinating? 0 of their worries materialized. That's just so interesting to me because it's like, how many times do we worry every day? How many times are we fearful of things? And we read this and we're like, oh, that makes absolute sense. But then we go back to worrying. So I want to open up a story about a woman who encounters a bit of fear. And this is in Luke chapter 1, so hopefully you're there with me. I'm going to start in verse 26, and we're just going to read through the whole thing here. Chapter 1, verse 26. In the 6th month of Elizabeth's pregnancy, God sent the angel Gabriel to Nazareth, a village in Galilee, to a virgin named Mary. She was engaged to be married to a man named Joseph, a descendant of King David. Gabriel appeared to her and said, "Greetings, favored woman, the Lord is with you." Confused and disturbed, Mary tried to think about what the angel could mean. "Don't be afraid, Mary," the angel told her, "for you have found favor with God. You will conceive and give birth to a son, and his name will be Jesus. He will be very great and will be called the Son of the Most High. The Lord God will give him the throne of his ancestor David, and he will reign over Israel forever. His kingdom will never end." So Mary asked the angel, But how can this happen? I am a virgin. The angel replied, the Holy Spirit will come upon you and the power of the Most High will overshadow you. So the baby to be born will be holy and will be called the Son of God. What's more, your relative Elizabeth has become pregnant in her old age. People used to say she was barren, for she has conceived a son and is now in her sixth month. For the word of God will never fail. Mary responded, I am the Lord's servant. May everything you have said about me come true. And then the angel left her. Now, this story is really awesome in a lot of ways. I want to probe three realities that we see in this story. And one interesting thing about Mary that you won't see in the next 2 weeks is this really unique ability for the angel to come to her with no prior intervention by God. And what I mean by that is there was this period of about 400 years where most Jewish people hadn't really heard anything from God. It was kind of this season where they were waiting for the Messiah to come from the Old Testament, and they're just kind of waiting. And so it's about 400 years later, and this angel comes to Mary. And so it's like, could you imagine having nothing, hearing nothing about God and him showing up in ways, and then all of a sudden you're an angel's at your door when you're getting ready to get married? I mean, it's crazy. So the first reality that we see in this story, very simply, is that God's plan often interrupts our lives. When I wrote the point, I wrote it like on Monday, and then I realized, I started thinking about it, I was praying through it throughout the week, and I was like, no, I think God it's almost always an interruption. Because the lives that we choose to live on our own volition without really much thought of bringing God into them are typically selfish, and God's plan is usually contrary to our selfishness. And so they're almost always an interruption in our lives. It's simple, but the angel literally shows up in Mary's life, and she's about to be married. At this time in this culture, in the Jewish culture, when you were engaged, you were basically married. And so like nowadays, when you're engaged, you can always break it off. And obviously you're planning a wedding and it's stressful. But this time was once you were engaged, you were basically married until you basically had the wedding and lived together. But you weren't really allowed to break it off once you were engaged. So there's a serious commitment we got here with Mary, who's some scholars would say 13 to 15 years old, which is ridiculous to think about. And this angel comes, and her response is clearly she's been interrupted, right? The angel shows up, and what is her response? She's confused and disturbed. Confused and disturbed. That's two very interesting words to use for that. And other versions are even a little bit worse in kind of saying what she felt. And so she's definitely afraid, a little bit scared. But I mean, could you imagine right now in our own lives, I think sometimes we think, well, God's not really intervening in radical ways in my life. And if like you just had an angel show up in your life, it's like, hey, you're gonna go do this thing. And you're like, what? You'd be like, why are you here? This probably isn't good, right? That's what she's thinking. And he's like, don't worry. And that's where the phrase fear not comes from. Fear not, the phrase that's used in some older translations, because we don't necessarily say that exact phrase. So the angel in this version says, do not be afraid. And he says that several times throughout the book of Luke. And so the first point is that God invites us into his plans. It's often an interruption. When you really think about that, and you think about interruption, I don't really think of very many positive terms for interruption, other than if you watch the ESPN show, Pardon the Interruption. That's the only thing I could think of that was positive for the word interruption. But then you start to read the Gospels, you start to read the story of Jesus, and you're like, man, that guy was always interrupted. He was always interrupted. He'd be on his way to go heal some guy's daughter, and then some girl grabs his cloak on the way, and then he heals her, and then he heals two other people, and then he goes and heals that person. Then he goes and he's talking in this one house, and people cut a hole in the ceiling and lower this guy down to be healed. Could you imagine if like I had a friend who like drilled a hole through the ceiling and came down, he's like, hey, Trey, we really need to talk. Like, could you imagine that? Jesus is always being interrupted. He's always being interrupted. And so that's the first kind of surface level is God interrupts us in our lives when he calls us into his plan. But I think that a lot of times we miss the interruption because we're so busy, we're so selfishly focused, we're just not being able to discern and look in the lens of where God could be interrupting us. Now, some of you know God's interrupting you and you're just like, I'm gonna push you away. If it's your first time here today, I'd say, I think you're being interrupted. You're here on a Sunday morning after the Bucks won last night. So I think you're already interrupted, which is great. But a lot of us, like, I think we know sometimes, like, I think God's wants me to do this. And you have to decide, am I going to do this? And what I love about Mary is that even though she's confused and disturbed, she responds in a powerful way. It's interesting because a lot of people would think that she's like terrified and afraid and like, I don't want to do this. And that's not necessarily her posture But all we know about this text is that that God sought out Mary, had an angel come to her, and she, in the long run, listens to what the angel says. And so I think about that in my own life. How do I cultivate a life that is willing to be interrupted and willing to notice the interruptions? I watched a movie a couple weeks ago with my wife and I. We went to the movies. We rarely go to the movies. We're more of like a Netflix or Hulu at home kind of people. But we went and we had the choice between The Joker and Mr. Rogers' movie. And so we went to the movie and it was insanely good. And I cried. We saw Mr. Rogers, by the way. And I rarely cry in movies. You can ask anybody. But it was a beautiful movie. It was very well done. And one of the most poignant parts of the movie was the fact that it made you sink into kind of the temperament of Mr. Rogers. I wasn't a Mr. Rogers fan. I thought the show was weird, didn't make any sense. And we went there, and the beginning scene starts, and all the, it just it's produced at such like a slow, like just calm level that it just draws you in. Because how often is our culture slow and calm? I don't even speak slow and calm up here. If I just started, all right, we're gonna, you'd be like, okay, Trey, come on, get to the point. And it just sucks you in. And one of the most beautiful parts of the movie, I don't know if it's everybody would say this, but he has this scene where he's on the film studio and he's gonna film an episode, and they had a Make-A-Wish kid come to the studio and get to like meet him and see the scene, the studio and all that. And it appeared as though in the movie this kid had some sort of a little bit of psychological issues and had some anger issues, and he just like had this sword and he just kept swinging it. And you could tell his parents were just like, come on, Johnny, like, just shake his hand, and like, you know, and Mr. Rogers is just standing there, just patiently waiting for, at least I think they said 45 minutes. And eventually he gets to calm down the child, and he gets to look him in the eyes and talk to him. But I loved that scene because I was like, man, that's how we should be. Like, we should live a life regardless of what we're doing, that we're willing to just be interrupted by like crazy things. It's one thing to be interrupted by somebody that you deem is very impressive or someone you look up to or your family, but it's another thing to be interrupted by somebody that really doesn't have any value to the worldly idea of your life. And so I watched that show and I absolutely loved it. And then I was reading through the Gospels this last week on just my own quiet time, and I was reading through the book of Luke, and I got to the a bunch of stories where Jesus was interrupted. And then I read the story of the Good Samaritan. And if you're not familiar with the Good Samaritan, basically this guy gets robbed on the way to a city. And there's two people that walk by him. One's a priest and one's kind of another religious guy. And they just walk around him. They don't help him at all. He's beat up, left for dead. They walk around him and they basically are like, I have more important things to do. And so the last guy that comes is a Samaritan, which is culturally crazy. It would normally be somebody that would want to help that person. And he helps him. He takes a day off work. He gives him money for the hospital. And I keep reading these stories and I'm like, man, like the gospel is full of interruptions. The gospel is full of interruptions. Instead of seeing interruptions as a negative connotation, as a negative word that affects our plan, what if we were able to see it as an opportunity for God to invite us into his plan? What if we were able to see the beauty of it? And so it's convicting in my own heart when I read Mary's story, because Mary was severely interrupted. If you're a woman here and you've either been married or you're engaged or you want to get married at some point in your life, could you imagine being a few months away from planning your wedding and then the angel just showing up and be like, hey, your whole life's going to be different, just so you know. And so that's why she asked the question, basically, well, how is this going to happen? She's not asking it in a way of disrespect or not being trusting, but she's asking it and basically like, well, I'm a virgin, so I don't know how that's going to happen. I'm not married yet with Joseph. She's not saying, well, I'm not really qualified. Well, I'm in a small town. Well, surely you meant someone else. Well, I'm pretty busy. But she responds in a basically, okay, like, what is this going to look like? And so our second point today, the second kind of reality that we need to notice, is that God's plan is not only interruptive, but it's often inconvenient and uncomfortable. It's often inconvenient and uncomfortable. And you're like, wow, Trey, you really have some fun words up on the screen. Yeah, interruption, inconvenient, uncomfortable. But it's the truth. The angel shows up and gives her the opportunity that really changes her life, changes the whole trajectory of who she'll be. And a lot of us, I think, in our own lives have this opportunity where we are interrupted, but we're really starting to count the cost of, do I really want to be uncomfortable? Do I really want to be inconvenienced by this? Do I really want to do what God's calling me to? Because it will change a lot of things. Do I really want to move if God's calling me to move? Do I really want to change jobs if this job might not make as much money, but it's with a better company? Do I really want to continually pursue this relationship? Do I want to end this relationship? Do I really want to be married? Do I really want this amount of money? And you start to just like worry about all these things. And you're just like, if I do this, I do that. And you're constantly ruminating on it in your own mind of basically, am I going to be comfortable and inconvenient? That's how we evaluate a lot of our things in our life, a lot of the decisions that we make. And Mary is literally just like, she's aware of that, aware of the change that will occur in her life, and she just moves forward with it, which is so insane, especially the fact that she's a teenager. To be able to have that wisdom is remarkable. It's remarkable. And so Mary's story is in my opinion, it can be a lot like ours, in that God can interrupt us right now, and there's so many things that I think God could be calling us to, but we have to be willing to ask the first question, is am I able to be interrupted? And then what am I gonna do about it? So when you are interrupted, what do you do about it? Do you immediately start to think about discomfort or inconvenience? Do you start to rationalize, is this worth my time? Is this really what God wants to do? Because if we look back at our past and we look at the fears that we had, and remember 91% of them typically don't even pan out, and you're like, man, I was so silly. Why did I ever trust? Why didn't I just trust God? It could have been easy. And I made it very difficult. And you wouldn't trade it for a thing. But in this current moment now, you're stuck and you're like, I'm fearful of this. I don't really want to move. I don't really want to budge. And I think the reason why, which is our third point, a lot of us are fearful of the outcome. We want to put it into our hands. We're like, I don't really want to be interrupted. I don't want to be inconvenienced or uncomfortable because I don't know what's going to happen. But when we read the text, we read the faithfulness of Mary in this story, this is our third reality, is that God doesn't call us to the outcome. He calls us to faithfulness. He doesn't call us to the outcome. He calls us to faithfulness. That our priority in the midst of interruption is not what will happen. It's not what will come of it. I use an illustration last service, which is kind of weird, but I use the illustration that if I was to grow a tree and if God was to grow a tree and both of them are going to bear fruit, which one would you want to put money on? My tree or God's tree? It's pretty simple, God's tree, right? But then why so often are we fearful of trusting in God's plan and his tree and his fruit in our lives? It's even cooler to see it in Paul's writing. Paul writes to the church of Corinth, and he has this really awesome passage. He says this. He says, God said to me, my grace is enough for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. So then I will boast more gladly about my weaknesses, so that the power of Christ may reside in me. Therefore, I am content with weaknesses, with insults, with troubles, with persecutions and difficulties for the sake of Christ. For whenever I am weak, then I am strong. For whenever I am weak, then I am strong. If you think about it, he's literally saying that people are better able to see God at work in his life when God works through his weaknesses, which is the same reason why I can think my plan's awesome and I can try to grow my own tree and cultivate my own fruit. But in reality, when you look at God's tree, you're like, why would I ever put my money in my tree? Why would I ever be fearful that God's tree is not going to be better? And even then, I don't need to worry about the actual fruit that comes to fruition because that's not my responsibility. That's God's responsibility. And so I love how Paul talks about, let's talk about our weaknesses, because in our weaknesses, that's truly when people won't see Paul, they'll see God. If you look throughout the Bible, you might see Moses is great, but really Moses is great because of God. And you might see David, we talked about David the last several weeks. David's great, but David was great because of God. You look at all these prophets and all these stories of the people in the Bible, the reason why they're in the Bible is because they're broken and they're weak, and in that God's able to show his power. And in that, all they are is just faithful. Sometimes they're not even fully faithful, but God still loves them. But the faithfulness is our priority. It's the trajectory of why we live our life. Because so many of us are captivated, are robbed from joy and freedom and fear because we're really worried about the outcome. If I move here, what will happen? Will I lose friends? Will I lose this? If I give this money to this person that really needs it, what happens if we're short down the road and we can't do these things? We can't go on vacation. We can't whatever. If I adopt or foster this child, what happens if it affects our normal family nucleus that we have right now? What if it throws off everything? Or what if the child has problems and then I can't work full time? Or what if we joined the church plant and then I got to move to Grandview and eat really good food? No, I'm just kidding. But I mean, you think about that kind of stuff, right? You're like, I'm settled in my apartment. I just signed my lease. It's great. What if you're wrestling with, should I really serve at Three Creeks? Do I really want to get up at 6 a.m., probably 5:30 a.m., depending on where you live, to get here for setup, just to set up everything? Do I really want to do that? That's my Saturday, that's my Sunday morning. We start to have all of these opportunities for God that's interrupting us. He's drawing us closer to himself, and our biggest priority is whether or not we're comfortable and whether or not it's inconvenient. And so Mary is not like, I'm not going to do this. She's like, tell me, how's this going to happen? Because she had no idea. I love this. This is the last story I'll share in the Bible here. In Jonah, I don't know if you've heard of the book of Jonah or you've read it. Maybe you've heard of the Veggie Tales, which is a great iteration of the book of Jonah. But Jonah's a very small book in the Old Testament. And in Jonah, what I love about this story is the end. We'll get to it in 1 second. But basically, Jonah's a prophet. God calls him to this city called Nineveh. It's a crazy, destructive, just chaotic city. And Jonah's fearful, and he's like, I've been to a lot of cities. I'm not going to go to Nineveh. So he sails in a boat the opposite way. And as he's sailing, God makes it storm like crazy. The crew's freaking out. Eventually, they throw him off the ship. He gets eaten by a whale or a fish or something in the ocean. He's in there for 3 days, right? And he kind of has a come to Jesus moment, and he repents, and he's like, all right, fine. Like, I need to trust in God. And so the fish spits him out, and then he goes to Nineveh. And I think a lot of times we're like, that's great. He did it. Like, he did what God wanted him to do. And we don't read the end of the story. I want to read you the end of the story. So Jonah goes to the city of Nineveh. He shares the good news. The people actually respond to it. And then he goes up on this hill looking down on the city of Nineveh, and he's basically waiting for God just to destroy the city. Like, well, I did my part. God, waiting for you to do yours. So in the midst of it, God's like gracious and gives him he grows a tree so he can have shade. It's kind of a weird part of the story, but he grows in this tree and he gets to sit under it. And then he's waiting for God to strike down Nineveh. And then the tree dies. And this is the end of Jonah. I kid you not. It says, God said to Jonah, are you really so very angry about the little plant? And he said, I'm as angry as I could possibly be. That's so dramatic for a tree, sorry. The Lord said, you were upset about this little plant, something for which you did not even work, nor did you have anything to do to make it grow. It grew overnight and died the next day. Should I not be more concerned about Nineveh, this enormous city? There are more than 120,000 people in it who do not know right from wrong, as well as many animals. It's the end of the story. There are more than 120,000 people in it who do not know right from wrong, as well as many animals. That's the end of the story, end of Jonah. And you're like, well, that's like, what happened? Did he save the city? Did he like strike it down? Did Jonah have a repentant heart? And it just ends the story. And what I love about that story is it reminds us that the whole part of the story is God's plan, and it's not about us in any way, and we have nothing to do with the outcome. And when you think about that, it's incredibly freeing, because a lot of times what we're fearful of is the outcome or what we can do to make the outcome better. And in our lives, we read Jonah and we're like, that's crazy. God literally was like, I think he's just like, don't worry about it. Leave the outcome up to me. That's my job. I have problems with this in my life a lot because I think I'm a pretty efficient person, and I really like to be scheduled and rhythmic, and I'm very not good about being interrupted. In fact, a couple weeks ago, Mark, who's the pastor at the other church, Movement Church, and then I have two bosses, which is just great, but Joel and Mark. And Mark sat me down, and he just kind of laid into me. He's like, hey, man, I'm going to be honest. You showed up here. You've done great. You're grinding. You're working hard. You're meeting with lots of people. And he's like, but I don't think you're leaving margin in your life to serve and be interrupted. And I was just like, dang. Because I had come here, and I'm like, I got to do some crazy things. I have to be all these things, I gotta be focused, I gotta meet all these people, build all these relationships. And in the midst of it, I was literally not doing anything that Jesus would do. But I was doing it for Jesus, right? But I was like, I'm gonna force the outcome of my own plan. And so it was humbling for me because I had to be willing to be like, I am not in any way leaving margin in my life to be interrupted by people or interrupted by things where God is calling me, because I'm trying to live the life that I believe God's calling me to in my own way. And that's the fear of not trusting Jesus. That's really what it is. It's just not trusting Jesus. And so that's been in my own life. But it's cool because there's other seasons of my life where I was in Tucson, Arizona, my last job at a church. And I was on a day off and I was praying and I was like, Lord, I just feel like I need to be interrupted. I feel like I've just been very rhythmic. And so I'm leaving the coffee shop and I see this homeless guy and he's sitting there. And so I'm like, okay, why not? It's my day off, right? So I wasn't even really being interrupted, but I go and I talk to him and I'm like, can I buy you McDonald's? So we eat McDonald's and we talk about his life and his needs and his story. And in the midst of that, now I always think of that story, not because of anything that I did or even the outcome, because I actually don't know where he is anymore. He doesn't have a cell phone, and I don't even know if his name was his real name. But I was able to be interrupted and follow through on it. And honestly, that homeless man taught me more in that moment than a lot of other things could have. And that God's plan was ultimately better, even in small moments like that. So I cling on to that moment because I think there's so many of those moments in our lives where we have that opportunity. And so you just have to think of these things. Am I living an interruptible life? Do I have margin in my life? Am I praying through it? What do I do when it happens? Am I willing to be interrupted, inconvenienced, uncomfortable? And then am I consumed by the outcome, or am I just being faithful? God is calling you to faithfulness. He's not calling you to fearfulness. And so in this season, there's plenty of things to think through in that lens. Let me pray. Lord, thanks for your word. Thanks for the opportunity for us to have freedom. I just pray we trust it. I pray we live in it. I pray it would be something that's on our hearts and our minds constantly in this season of the holidays and the busyness and the chaos and the finances and all of that stuff, Lord. I just ask that we would yearn for interruption in our lives. I ask that we would yearn for your spirit to involve us in your plan, because your plan's always better, even if we don't believe it at the start. Help us to not live a life that's based on convenience and comfortability, but help us to love people in the way that you would, and help us to trust that you're good and that you're faithful. Amen.
Thanks for listening to the Three Creeks Church podcast. To find out more about our church, to give online, or to attend a service, visit threecreekschurch.com.